Thank you for coming. My name is Alexandra Wallace, and yes, I'm going to talk about the method that we developed that actually allowed us to close the whole loop of the soil water retention curve. So we've been talking a lot about the drying and wetting paths and that hysteresis and that gap. And for the first time, we actually were able to see what happens after that. How do we close that loop? The co-author of this work is Ning Lu, here present in the audience, from Colorado School of Mines. And so you're all very familiar with this curve, the soil water retention curve, and I just want to point out once again that we all know that depending on what path you're following, this curve will be different. So if you are following a drying pattern and then a wetting pattern, you will end up with some hysteresis. And that's where the data so far stops. And so what we wanted to look at was, well, there must be some physical mechanism that allows this to go back to saturation. And that's the loop that we investigated. So we looked at the method that measures this curve from drying to wetting down to a positive pore water pressure regime, closing that loop. What does this mean? This means that it is possible to have positive pore water pressures and still have an unsaturated soil condition. Why is this relevant? Well, we see that in the field all the time. For example, at Elliott Forest State, we have a landslide where this is the data of the sensors that we measure, soil moisture sensors and suction sensors. You see the drying curve and the wetting curve. Let's focus on the middle one. We see a drying and wetting curve. And if we zoom in on the bottom portion of those sensors, we do see that we have some positive pore water pressures and still have unsaturated soil conditions. This also happens if you change your groundwater table very rapidly in dams. And this could be the trigger for landslides in some cases. And so our objective was to obtain a full soil water retention curve that includes both paths, the drying and the wetting, and closing that loop. And this was done by combining two methods, one that it's called TRIM, that stands for Transient Water Release and Imbibition Method. This has been published in 2012 and allows us to measure the soil drying and wetting curves for a soil in a relatively fast way, and it's being extensively tested. And then we implemented a constant flow method to complete that loop. So let's look at the setup. So all this portion of the setup, all the right portion, is really what the components for TRIM were, and then this guy here, an automated flow pump, is the component for the constant flow method. Let's look at the components in a little bit more detail. We have a flow cell where we put our soil specimen, and the soil specimen sits on a ceramic stone, a higher entry value ceramic stone, so only water can flow through it, not air. And we use an air pressure regulator panel to apply air pressure through the top of the flow cell. On the base of the flow cell, we have two outlets. One outlet allows us to connect the flow cell to a reservoir, and so this can be used to saturate the full system. And we have another outlet that has a three-way valve here, and that's the outlet that allows any water from the soil to flow in or out of the system to a balance. And this balance, if you see, is connected to a computer, so we record all the data. So basically, any change in moisture content that happens in this soil gets recorded. And by the way, this goes through a bubble trap, which allows us to quantify any diffused air during testing. The other way, the other option of the three-way valve is connected to our constant flow pump, and that will allow us to inject some water through the soil sample and create some positive pore water pressures, and I'll get to that in a second. This is a picture of the actual apparatus that we used in the lab. By the way, our constant flow pump has a water pressure sensor mounted here, so we can directly monitor the pore water pressure that's right here at the base of our soil sample. So let's look at how that test goes. But since I said that this combines two tasks, and one of them, very important one, is TRIM, which will allow us to find the drying and wetting paths of the curve, I thought I would do a quick review of that. So TRIM works under one principle. If we have a soil specimen that sits on a ceramic disc, higher entry value ceramic disc, and we apply a suction increment to that specimen, the flow that comes out, the transient data of that flow coming out, is a unique function of that soil, given that your system is constant. And so this curve is actually unique for every different soil specimen that you put in here, which means we can use it as an objective function to inverse model it and obtain the hydrological parameters of our curve, and we can obtain the full drying curve. After we've applied large suction increments and we've dried our sample, if we decrease the suction of the soil, and our soil now is drier, the soil will imbibe water back, and so we can again use the transient data of that water coming back into the soil as an objective function to inverse model it and get our wetting curve. And so we did that for the first stage of our test. So here's our apparatus. We set up our soil sample in the flow cell. We make sure that our sample is saturated, and then we are going to apply air pressure into our soil sample so we obtain the drying portion of the curve. To have a better solution and avoid infinite solutions, we do apply two increments, a small and a large increment. And as we apply air to the sample, you know that the water will flow out of the sample through this bubble trap into the balance, and we're monitoring all our data, and now our soil is not longer so saturated, it's drier, and we can inverse model that objective function and obtain the drying portion of the soil water retention curve. Then we continue to the wetting portion of TRIM, where we decrease the suction on top of the flow cell, and so water will flow back from that container that's sitting on the balance to the soil, and we still monitor the water content of the soil. We use that curve to inverse model our parameters, and we obtain the wetting portion of the curve. So far that's TRIM. It's been published and tested and validated. So what we do next is we ask ourselves, well, is this water content the same as that one? And generally the answer is not. And if it's not, then what we do is we start applying a constant flow rate with this flow pump through the soil, and we monitor the pore water pressure that we get. And so we apply that until our pore water pressure is steady, and we see a little bit of ponded water on top of the sample to make sure that we've gone through the whole soil sample. Once we do that, we switch our three-way valve and allow water, the ponded water, to drain out of the sample, and everything again is being monitored by the balance so we can account what is the water content in our soil, and we can calculate our moisture content. And we have one data point in our negative suction or positive pore water pressure regime. So we know the pore water pressure, we know the water content, we have one data point. That pore water pressure eventually decreases to zero because we allow the sample to drain, and we ask ourselves, again, are these moisture contents equal? If the answer is no, we go through the loop however many times it's necessary until we have gotten up to full saturation. And so if that's the case, the test ends. These are some data, actual data that we got for some soils. And so, again, the first stage is TRIM. This is transient data that we get with a small suction increment, a large suction increment. This is the flow out of that soil sample, and this is the flow back into the soil. these are our objective functions that we use to get the drying and wetting paths. These are some typical curves that we see of the pore water pressure that we monitor with that sensor from the constant flow pump. And as you can see, we wait until we reach a steady state conditions in each case. And if we want to apply a larger positive pore water pressure, obviously we just apply a larger constant flow rate. Now remember that I told you that the soil was sitting on top of the ceramic stone. Well, that ceramic stone has a little bit of an impedance, and so we wanted to account for that. And so we did run a blank slip test to calibrate for that so we can subtract the effect of that ceramic stone. This is an example of our results. This is a silty soil obtained from Colorado. Once again, we have the drying path, the wetting path. We do have a little bit of hysteresis. And this portion here is zoomed in this window, and you can see the data points, the path that we follow at four different flow rates closing that loop. We wanted to test this new method and make sure that it's repeatable and that different flow rates don't affect it. And these are just some of the results. You can see these are two completely independent samples that were prepared in the same way, and you can see that the test is very repeatable. We ran this test for different types of soils. We ran for a sandy soil, a silty soil, and a clay soil. This is a non-expansive clay obtained from Arkansas. This is a sandy soil obtained from Seattle, from a landslide site. And basically what we saw is that we can actually close the loop in all these three cases. For a clay soil, it takes about 12 kilopascals to close the loop. Sandy soil, just a couple of kilopascals. Finally, our main conclusion is that this method is valid. It allows us for the first time to see what's going on that negative suction regime of the soil. It is reliable and repeatable, and we were able to perform this test on different types of soils. Thank you.
Last round of questions for a break.
Yeah. How did you saturate the sample initially? This is more or less your reference point.
Yes. Yeah, so what we did is we applied vacuum on top and allowed water to flow through the sample from the bottom. And we monitored the mass of the soil, so we were sure that the expected water content, the expected amount of water would go in the sample.
So it was a complete saturation?
It was 100% saturation, yes.
Yeah. When you map the curve picture closed in the positive pressure range,
what we did is it didn't pond too much water, and that's correct. And so what we really reported here is the pressure at the bottom of the sample because we did subtract the effect of the ceramic stone. But you're correct. A more accurate pore water pressure, an average pore water pressure, would be somewhere in between the top of the sample and the bottom of the sample. So what is reported here right now is at the pore water pressure at the bottom of the sample.
I'm allowed to add that for me, this is kind of repeated flushing with different velocities of water. And I'm really surprised that you are able to bring the sample then up again to 100% water saturation, which you had initially after vacuum. This is quite surprising to me.
Yes. We were wondering if we were going to need too high flow to do that, but for the samples that we ran, including non-expansive clay, we were able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we've looked at the saturated hydraulic conductivity when we started the loop at the soil sample. And in past tests, we compared them with measurements from the field, and they're comparable. They're not identical, but they're comparable. The tring method does allow you to look at the hydraulic conductivity function of the soil. And at the end of the test, because we're doing a constant flow test and you're close to saturation, you could actually look at the data of your flow rate and you could back calculate that hydraulic conductivity as well.